Blog Talk Radio.
Stanley, Sports in Depth, Bob Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. It's a Sunday show. We say happy birthday to Marion Boykin, who celebrates another birthday. The greatest boxing player of his generation, the greatest television show in boxing history, working on boxing. A lot of birthdays this month. We'll get into those. Welcome back, Mel Cosell Smith Jr., Rooney, and back with us after the open heart surgery. But without further ado, let's first get into how we're open Sports in Depth and John Coltrane, your Lord, is our opening to pray. Your Lord, we thank you for another day. We thank you for little things we so largely take for granted. We thank you, Lord, and alive and healthy. Bless your name and your darling son's name. We ask that you bless our family here on the panel. Our family in Brazil and here. More importantly, let your way be our way. We ask these blessings and all the blessings in the name of your darling son, Jesus. Amen. And with that, we kick it off saying happy birthday today, the birthday. Greatest boxing mind of the generation, the greatest boxing show in the history of television, cable, non-cable, on this planet, working on boxing. Marion B. Boykin, celebration of the birthday of Davis. Happy birthday to him, and continue the month as Black History Month has a horde of birthdays. Arthur Ashe on the 2nd, and Karen on the 5th, Russell the 12th, Jim Brown on the 15th, 17th, Michael Jeffrey George. For this week, we got some more. Lee Murray and Floyd Mayweather Jr. on this month. Boxing aficionado, the man who picked up the court. So I'll ask John McEnroe on the 17th. And my brother celebrated his birthday the 7th. Monday after my Uncle John's birthday is the same day as Babe Ruth, the 46th. All these gentlemen, say happy birthday. Those who gone, we remember quite fondly. Arthur Ashe and the Bay, George Herman Root. Arthur Ashe, great thing was about a name. Just how much we love you. And I'm Rose had a great line. All the guys should have been African American. You gotta be the first. It's good. Happy birthday, gentlemen. Those are going on with you. To American history, African American history, and to the world. And with that, coming back in, take a look at our board. We open up Black History Month, Rosa Parks. A lot of people don't know Rosa, the theme that Rosa is that she's this lady who got on the bus and she was tired and no. Parks was a prominent member of the NAACP. Aftermath of that, we're going to read something about that in a minute. Yeah, we'll talk some more about Rosa. Rosa was an investigator going to the depths of the South and investigating rapes of African-American women in the South. So this idea of her just a sole figure tied and took a stand, this Parks always took a stand. And after she led that Buscott movement and the Civil Rights movement, her and her husband had to leave. There were altercations, repercussions. They had to depart that part of time. Miss Fox, you understand? And I've got to get Big C one. Thank him, too, for putting our musical log together and all the other technical things he does. But Neville Brothers, thank you, Sister Rosa. You are the one. Freedom Movement. Thank you, Sister Rosa Parks. Fox Daily, what's that? Blog Talk Radio. The Western Guard Radio Network. And we're going to talk about boxing. We've got a collage of pictures. We have Horton Rosa Parks is there. Then we have the quattro profile of Mrs. Martin Luther King, Dr. Hyatt, and two other, Shirley Chisholm. Chisholm, early prominent female figure, not only in the movement, but in politics. And I was sent something by one of the lieutenants from the Trinity Police Department, greatest police department in history of New York City and the world back in the day, 70s to the 80s, 90s. And it was a notice that was sent out. People not to let their children listen to black music. You know, didn't want them to listen to music, didn't want their minds infested and poisoned. You know, hadn't been that long ago, and we take our hat off. You know, everybody, I say everybody here in 1010 Winds of African American nature. You listen to 1010 Winds News for your news. It was 1010 Winds, the late great Hal Jackson, that was the first AM station to play black artists on their AM dial. So 1010 Winds is always a winner with me. And we look at the collage, Jim Brown, birthday this month, greatest running back of all times. Many say the greatest football player of all time. Earl Thomas, salute my man Earl T. was in Times last week. I tried to get a copy of that. The Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl. We also continue to move on down. Picture Ralph Kiner. We say prayers out to his family. Mr. Kiner was 91 years old, and he was the only man in the history of baseball to lead the league in home runs 7 years in a row. Also, was the first National League to hit 50 home runs in a season more than once. When Willie Mays did it in 1965, Willie Mays became only the second player in National League history to hit 50 home runs in a season more than once. Kind of had one of his finest seasons, 54 home runs, 179. Was not known to strike out a lot. Struck out over 100 times in the first season, but then one of his greatest seasons, only struck out 61 times. Met Mr. Kiner on many occasions, talked about the Blue Laws, how they drove him crazy, had a great voice, and he told me something I'll never forget. Among the things he did, he told me that Todd Gooden was the greatest young pitcher he ever saw. And with that, one of the greatest boxing minds I ever saw, too, is none other than Ike from Jack Boxer. Ike, how's things going, baby? Can I get Ike in here? Okay. All right. We have lost a little communication here. Okay. Waiting for the call to come in. Doc Stanley, Sportsnet, Blog Talk Radio, and the Trust and Guard Radio Network. And like I said, we are looking for the posse to join us. We celebrate.
Al West is here.
Harold Weston Jr. is in-house now. Okay, Zach Box is going to be with us, but we got Harold out in-house. And Harold, got some fights coming up. And, they made the Pacquiao-Bradley fight again. Your thoughts and reflections on that fight, Harold?
Isn't that sad? I mean, isn't it sad that they made that fight? I mean, what is the fight for? I mean, what is the fight for? I mean, what are they fighting for? I don't, they got so many belts, I don't even know what they're fighting for no more.
Yeah, that's a line that you constantly talk about, Harold, is the abundance of belts that are now, all over. I see stuff like, wow, every belt, every fight is a championship fight.
Right.
You know,
that's what I'm saying. No belt. Nobody who's ever, there's no real legitimate champion of any weight class. I mean, if you want to really call a legitimate champion, would be the heavyweight championship. You can't even call that because the Klitschko brothers, they share that together. So, I mean, what are we talking about? It's sad. They have completely ruined the boxing world. Why? You know why almost 30 million people watch or 100 million people watch the football game? Because they were fighting for one glory, one championship fight, one championship game. That's what the World Series, same thing, one championship game. I mean, we up here got 20 champions, 30 champions running around here, right? And then these guys think they really are pure champions and thinking that they're the best fighters in the world, and they're not. And that's the sad part. How do you put them down in history? I don't understand it. How do you put them down in history for anything, accomplish anything, of being a world champion or in a certain weight class if you got 7, 8 champions in one weight class? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
You know how if people understand what it meant when Henry Armstrong walked into the room, there were only 8 champions and championships. When he walked in the room, there he was with 3 of them, welterweight, lightweight, and it was something. You know what I mean? The featherweight, lightweight, and welterweight champion of the world. I mean, when he walked in the room, you just saw half of the champion because they said he really won the middleweight title. So you saw half of the world championships in one guy, and you look at that. How it's Dusty always talks about the weak link. Boxing fraternities and boxing organizations, and you as a guy who was an elite fighter, a championship fighter, and a guy that was a promoter and the matchmaker, the greatest venue of boxing, MSG. I mean, you could really talk about this. I mean, is this? I mean, are the promoters, and in this sense, to a certain degree, are they letting boxing down?
Well, they are. They completely are letting boxing down. I think that the effect that when Don King came in and did what he did, and now you have all these other promoters coming from left field, right field, and any other field that they're coming from, and just performing, putting fighters up there, and every time a promoter comes up, he's got a championship fight. I have no problem with promoters promoting fights, but I think that there should be some type of rules or something where we can have this one champion, because basically the people in this world today, they are not enjoying boxing at all. They think boxing is a fluke, and everything that you see about. Let's just give you a good point. Manny Pacquiao gets knocked out 2 times, right? He comes off a knockout and he fights for a championship. How does that happen?
How does that happen? You just said it. Only in America.
Yes. But my point is that the sadness of the sport itself is something that, I feel sorry for because I love the sport. It's a great sport, but it's just the people that's running it and thinking they know everything. And pretty much they're stealing money from people's pockets. And people are not going to be spending money to come to fights because of the fact that it's not. It's almost like saying it's not legit.
It's funny how it's when you talk about a situation. There was a time there was a scarcity of the belts, along with even more scarcity of African Americans getting title shots. I mean, Ray Robinson was welterweight champ for about 7 years before he get a title shot, and now you know it's what you're saying, Harold. You know, and not only does everybody have a belt. I remember you told us if I stand this sport in the Blog Talk Radio, I trust in God. Their network, we say happy birthday to Marion Boykin and to Jim Brown, Bill Russell, John McEnroe, Michael Jordan, and remembering Babe Ruth and Arthur Ashe, happy birthday to Uncle John and my little brother James, and also head PR, head of security, Tony Hike, the 15th of this month. Thanks, Jim. You know, you talked about too, Harold, how there were guys who were going to put everything in your car. They would pay everything. As long as they got the fight, they wanted to fight, which meant they were trying to guarantee a win, Al.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's all it is for today's fighters, because the money's so great now, and at the same time, you know, these guys, these promoters who get fighters, they're picking their own guys who they want to fight and get a win over, and walk around saying, "I got the greatest champion of all time." If you look at the headlines every time you see a promotion, you always hear this. I got the greatest fighter that's around. I got the hardest knockout puncher. I got this. Every show you hear, every fighter is great. And we all know that far from being great. They use that word so loose that it's just a shame that they should be locked up for using a word calling these certain fighters great, because that's taken from the great ones that are really great. And we're talking about the Ray Robinson and Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier and Emil Griffin, the guys that really fought to be world champions and great champions that they have become. And that's the sad part about the sport today. You have really put a blemish on these great men who accomplished something, who worked hard to do what they did and got to where they got in life, and at the hard way of doing it. Not the easy way, a hard way to do, and they were great. And now you bring along Humpty Dumpties and saying they're great. That's sad. That's really sad.
And you talked about that too. And I remember at a press conference, man. And you got a guy that's 22-0. You got a guy that's 17-0. And the guy comes up and says, you know, I'm really looking forward to this fight. You know, I'm fighting a great fighter. I'm like, whoa. You know. Combined, you guys have got 39 wins. I mean, you're right. The word "great" is so often.
Mm-hmm.
How?
And you remember how they were bragging about Roy Jones, talking about how great he was. And I said, it's like a joke, okay? And then when he finally fought somebody that really wanted to test his butt, knocked his butt right out, okay? So I mean, where's this greatness? And everybody had Roy Jones on this pedestal. But nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody wants to really get into that kind of conversation, because he was not great. And I kept telling you a long time when we first said, no, this guy ain't all that great. They're picking the right opponents for him, but he ain't great. We ain't never seen his chin get tested. Soon as his chin got tested, he started falling to the ground. Hello?
Hello? Yeah, go ahead, Al.
Yeah, so Roy Jones started falling apart. So, you know, I'm just saying, using that word great, believe me, you remember they had him on the pedestal. They had him as one of the greatest light heavyweights, greatest middleweight. They had him everything,
well,
Roy
you know,
Jones.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because I often said that I thought that that he should have stayed, once he got the heavyweight, he should have stayed at heavyweight for the scene. And once he came back down to light heavyweight, you know, it was a matter of exposure. But
Mel, stop it. Stop
right,
it. He would never make heavyweight, okay?
Down,
he picked
down,
the right
Hal,
guy to
down.
Fight at that time.
Calm down, Hal. Calm down. Hey, calm down. You know, hey, this ain't you, lady. You know, and it seemed, you know, but once you went back down, and now you added the fact that he started fighting guys that could fight. Did he have any kind of skills at all, but something about him that you liked out and what and you say this so often. We got hoops here, basketball. You say this so often too, Hal, is that, you know, you gotta fight quality fighters to learn how to fight. Could he have been all these guys could, you know, is one of his drawbacks that he didn't fight quality fighters, and then when he fought them, bam, he was lost?
Well, that's the whole thing. Mel, you're not a quality fighter. You're not a great fighter until you fight the great ones. All right? You don't fight Humpty Dumpty and Mickey Mouse and then say, you fight 25 of those and say you're a great one. All right? And you're hand-picking your guys. My thing is that when you start fighting the guys that did lay that groundwork, and you go up there and you take that stone. Hey, Mel, I was never known to be a great fighter, right? But when they started throwing people at me, and when I know that I didn't even know I could fight until Teddy Bill Clancy said to me, he said, I'm very proud of you. He said, because you have shown the world that you can stand up with the best of them. When Teddy Brenner told me, he said, I never thought you could fight. He said, but I got to tell you right now, Harold, you're one hell of a fighter.
You know what? That's amazing.
You're right, the top 10. Hey, when I heard it from them two guys, because I know they don't get credit for nothing, It was over. It was over. And if I look at my record, I done boxed everybody that they thought to fight, all right? I done boxed everybody who they thought to fight and stand toe-to-toe with them and had to. But my point is that when they classified the Roy Jones, Roy Jones was never, ever close to Ray Leonard. And I put Ray in with great ones, okay? Ray could fight. Ray didn't duck nobody. Ray fought everybody. All right? My point is that, you know, when you can come that status and that crowd that I was in, when you're talking about that Duran and, you know, the Ray Leonard's and Jose Napoli's and the Griffins and all, and everybody fighting everybody. And, hey, bro, and you can stand with everybody standing with everybody? Shit. Then you talk to me. Roy Jones would have never made it with him. He got knocked out as soon as he got with the first one of them. There's no ifs and buts about it.
Block Stanley, supposing that Block Talk Radio was talking about a network double power, how was he who never leaves no stone unturned? And he's telling to put more box. We got also other big fights coming from rumors. Miguel Cotto and Sergio Martinez and Madison Square Garden. And we also got some talk of another fight. Well, we won't say anything just yet. Who got you here, baby? What's happening in the world of basketball? Well, you know, it seems that as bad as basketball has been in New York City, that there's still an outside chance for both the Nets and the Knicks to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they can make the playoffs. Hey, Hal, how you doing there, man?
All right, buddy. How you feeling?
Okay. Yeah, they got a chance. And also, I know we were talking last week, me and Seguin talked about Maurice Cheeks getting fired. I couldn't believe, I was shocked when he got fired. That was unbelievable.
They won four
straight when he was coaching. I couldn't understand that one. Really can't.
As Marion Brinkman would say, it's remarkable to me that a coach, in the midst of a winning streak, gets fired. And this is the second time this has happened to an African-American coach. Willie Randolph was in the midst of a winning streak and on the road and got fired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we find that Maurice Cheeks, in the midst of a four-game winning streak, getting close to 500, gets fired. Can we talk about the kind of player Maurice Cheeks was? He was an outstanding player, one-time all-time leader in steals, a big part of that Sixer team. You know, I look back, had Maurice Cheeks been there instead of Doug Collins and World Team Freak?
Oh, definitely. They would have been three-time champions. Oh, yeah. Maurice Cheeks was a hell of a point guard. Real smart. And leap his butt off, too. He was very underrated point guard in NBA. Never heard about him. Very quiet.
You know, it's funny you said that, but I remember talking to different players. They said, hey, man, Maurice Cheeks ran Philadelphia. Who's up? We got the All-Star game coming. I believe you have your grading, at your half-season grading. Can we have your grades and insight on the world of basketball. Give us your list. Give us the insight. We've got the All-Star game coming up. We have your rankings, your gratings. Let's have them, Hoops, right here.
Oh, you talk about the teams? Okay. The Eastern Conference? Okay. Okay, for the Eastern Conference, Toronto Raptors, I gave them a B+. That was the most surprising team in the NBA so far. I gave the Nets a B+. I gave the Sixers, Knicks.
You're giving the Nets a B+. So you mean to tell me that they've really come back the second half? And
yes, they have. And also congratulate Jason Kidd for the Coach of the Month. He was 10-3 of the month of January, so we want to congratulate him. They've been coming on lately, so I guess Jason Kidd try to figure it out. They well deserved it. I give them a B+ because they started to pick it up.
Not only that, also, you know, a lot of people talked about the situation when he fired Coach Frank. And I think a lot of people really wanted to see him fall on his face, and now nobody's coming forward and saying he was right.
Right. Nobody ain't say nothing. Everybody kept quiet. You're right. And I also gave the Knicks a C-. I gave Boston a D-. I gave the 76ers a D.
I mean, aren't you kind of hard on Boston? I mean, I don't think people expected Boston to really do anything. So I mean, they lost Garnett, they lost Pierce. Rondo's been hurt. I mean, isn't a D a little hard on them? Yeah, who's your?
Not really. I just gave what I seen out there on the court.
Well, hey, listen. You're the guru. You're the man. If you say they get a D it has to be. Doc Stanley, Sportsnet Broad Talk Radio on the Touchdown Guard Radio Network. And we're here once again saluting our own Mel. So, Cell Smith Jr. will be back with us. Happy birthday to Marion B. Boykin, greatest boxing mind of the generation, big Harold Weston fan, and birthdays this month. And we told you, Arthur Ashe on the 2nd, Hank Aaron on the 5th, Babe Ruth on the 6th, my brother James, and my Uncle John's birthday is the same day as Babe Ruth. But for years, him and my brother were celebrating the same birthday because they thought it was the 7th. And when my grandfather passed away, the late, great Bishop Paul M. Howard, who's one of his classic lines was that, if you go to hell and expect to see me there, you'd be sadly mistaken. And they found that my uncle was born on the 6th. And the 6th is Babe Ruth's birthday. The 7th is my brother James. The 12th, Bill Russell. 11 championships in 13 seasons. Celtics won the championship. I mean, you know, this is mind-boggling. I think about the day. The Celtics won the championship 8 years in a row. That's repeat plus two. I mean, that's Repeat plus two. I mean, 8 years in a row they won the NBA championship. 8 years in a row, 11 out of 13 years, really for Russell, he got hurt his second year in the league, so he didn't play. So the Celtics actually won in years that he played 11 championships in 12 years. He came out of college, back-to-back yep. NCAA champion.
He was a player coach, too.
Well, as we talk about African American History Month, the great
player coach with the Celtics, one of them championships. He was a player coach.
The first African American coach and the first player coach to win an NBA championship. Hoops and how it don't hurt to have Bill Russell on your team when you're coaching too. But so we look at so much. Arthur Ashe, let's go back to Arthur, Black History Month, first African American male to win a Grand Slam tournament. And he won the greatest U.S. Open ever. Arthur won the U.S. Open in 1968. It was the first time it was open to pros and amateurs. So he beat the very best pros and the very best amateurs, guys who said, well, he could have been a pro. Arthur Ashe beat him. Arthur is the 2nd. We told you Hank on the 5th, all-time home run king by a right-handed batter. He averaged his whole career 33 home runs and 100 RBIs a season. George Herman Roof, the Babe. And the two superstars, my family, my brother Jane, Uncle John, and we lost Bill Russell on the 12th. Jim Brown, enough said, he's the greatest football player ever, unquestionably the greatest running back ever, right there with Gale Sayers. And then on the 16th of this month is the birthday of John McEnroe. John McEnroe Jr., I call him the Sugar Ray Robinson of tennis. And then we also, on the 17th, guy that many people think is the greatest basketball player ever, Michael Jeffrey Jordan. We also want to salute one of the top. In fact, he has to be unquestionably the last great PR man in the history of boxing. That's top ranks, incomparable, iconic Lee Samuels. He has the same birthday as Arthur Ashe. We want to salute him. The last great PR man in boxing. And I'm talking about a guy who knows the game, who knows the writers, you know, who knows his weaknesses, who knows, you know, some people are all into the daily, but he knows the guys from the weeklies, he knows the guys from the daily, he knows his radio people, he knows the people who got the seniority. Just a great asset. And the guy, I'm top rank, been top rank in a long time. I think it was Main Bout when they first started out. The original name was Top Rank. But anyway, it was happy birthday to everybody else. The month will finish with some more birthdays. We have the birthday of Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Eddie Murray, greatest switch hitter in the history of baseball. All of baseball. And this month we have two of the only four guys in the history of baseball to get over 500 home runs, okay, 500 doubles, and 3,000 base hits. The first one to do it was Willie Mays. The second one was Hank Aaron. And the third one to do it, and the only switch hitter to ever do it, was Eddie Murray. Over 500 home runs, 500 doubles, and 3,000 base hits. That's Stanley Sports, the Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. Hoops, so what's more basketball? Hoops, I didn't understand this. Kevin Durant is averaging 30 points a game. He's got 26 points, and the whole quarter of basketball left to go. Why?
He's unbelievable. He is unbelievable. He's a one-man wrecking machine out there. He's tearing them up out there. That's my MVP so far for the first half. He's something else. Rob Westbrook, he's taking his all the scoring on the shoulder. He's unbelievable. For a guy almost 7 feet tall, can handle and shoot from the three-point land, he's something else.
That's a good point that people don't understand. He's the youngest man ever to win a scoring championship. But does he remind you a lot of McAdoo?
No, remind me of George Gervin and Bob McAdoo combined.
Wow. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
That's Gervin right.
Gervin and McAdoo combined. Wow.
That's right. You heard that from me.
McAdoo
and Gervin combined.
You know what? It's funny you say that about Gervin, because I remember when they were going to merge, I remember asking Julius and everybody here knows Doc Stanley Sports and the Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. When I say Julius, I'm talking about Julius Erving. When I say Eddie, I'm talking about Eddie Murray. And I remember I asked Julius when the leagues merged, and I said, you know, who's going to be the guy that's surprising them? Who's going to be the guy that, you know? And he said, well, they know about me. They know about George. He's talking about George McGinnis, who was in the league the year before. The Knicks had tried to get McGinnis, but they couldn't get him. And the Sixers had him, and he had led all forwards in scoring. And he said, but Ice, he said, is the guy that's going to surprise him. And he was so right. Until Michael Jordan came along, George Gervin had the most scoring titles won by a guard. And he told that great story of on the last day of the season, David Thompson scored 77 points to take over the scoring leadership. And they,
73.
The reporter called them, called Ice at home. And I remember I said, we were listening to Ice on a conference call. He said, those bastards must have been as good as, big as garbage can tops. and as he came to the game, he said, you know, hey, okay, I take my hat off to him. He won the title. And when he walked in, all the team said, Ice, man, look, man, hey, we're giving you the ball. You go ahead to the hoop, get it. And then he said, okay, yes, good, the plays. And Doug Moe, the coach, said, hey, Ice, go get that title. And he dropped the, I think, 63 or 73 points it was. And at the end of the third quarter, you know, I think about that now. That's amazing. You know what? He could have scored more and may have had a shot at the record of 81 that Kobe has for a guard in a game. And he was the guy that Julius said was going to wow him. And also, today, he still has the record for most consecutive games of 20 or more points scored. The idol of Derrick Coleman. Kerwin wears 44 because of him. And he used to like that finger roll. And And Ice would roll that in your face and go down the court and say, hey, big fella, the great George Kervin, great player, great person. Doc Stanley, SportsNet Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. We'll be right back with the Hoopster and Harold Weston Jr. But let's just play a little music for you, okay? We ain't going now, okay?
I know you wanna David,
we'll be back.
But I refuse to let you go.
We ain't let you go.
If I have to beg, plead for your sympathy, I don't mind, cause you mean that much to me. Ain't too proud to beg, and you know it.
Black History Month, the Temptations. And they were unquestionably the greatest all-around singing group ever. We're talking about dancing, singing. Everybody could lead. David Ruffin, you heard him leading on that one. Eddie Kendrick, the first big hit, The Way You Do the Things You Do. Their last great hit across the board, rock, pop, and R&B, Just My Imagination. Their first great hit across the board, My Girl, Paul Williams, They Live I Can See, Melvin Franklin. The first big group, you know. I remember saying, now let's meet the Temptations. Hi, I'm David Ruffin. Hi, I'm Eddie Kendrick. Hi, I'm Paul Williams. Hey, I'm also Melvin Franklin. Great group, great guys. And it's amazing that the founder of the group, Otis, is still alive. And it's amazing, I thought, how he never had a problem about being in the background. You know, never had a problem about not being the lead singer. Paul was the original lead singer of the Temptations. And, you know, Eddie led their first big hit, The Way You Do the Things You Do. David came and led a horde of the hits. Paul Williams was the first in attempts to pass. And just a little black history of, I think, unquestionably, the greatest male group, pound for pound, in the history of the business. And they originally came to Temptations. Temptations was the name they were given after they got there. The name was switched to the Pirates by Greg Gordy, but they came as the Distance. And the name was changed to Temptations. This year was the last number one hit across the board for them, with Eddie Kendricks in the group and Paul Williams. Just My Imagination, the last great Temptation across the board, R&B, rock, and soul. And death. Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. We're talking basketball, we're talking football, we're talking baseball. A big press conference tomorrow as the Yankees announce a signing of their new Oriental hurler. And it's ironic that it's right in the same week of the man probably considered the greatest Yankee of all. That's none other than Babe Ruth, George Herman Ruth. We also, in our opening photo monologue, we have pitchers. Alex Rodriguez has decided to, hey, take a year off, make a suspension. And there's rage coming out of Florida that Derek Jensen Jeter is 100% looking like the DJ of old. Looking forward to opening day. So we salute those two Yankees. As you know, Alex is the youngest man ever to hit 600 home runs. That's still to date. The day, only infielder ever do 40-40 in the history of baseball. Derek Jeter, the first African-American, the first baseball player, period, in the history of the Yankees. It's amazing stat. In the history of the Yankees, Derek Jeter is the only Yankee ever to get 3,000 hits. Not Babe Ruth, not Joe DiMaggio, not Mickey Mantle, not Reggie Jackson, not Lou Gehrig. Derek Anderson Jeter, first Yankee ever to get 3,000, and the first Yankee to ever win an All-Star Game MVP. DJ, I have said this in print, written in print, said it here, and said this way: Derek Jeter is second to none as a player and a person. Everything that Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be, everything Mickey Mantle wasn't, a real live American hero. And with that, let's get on back up here, and we're going to once again the birthday thing for you today. So yeah, it still is. My name Boykin celebrates another birthday today.
Happy birthday to him.
Yeah, to the Boykin. And 2 days from now, it'll be Bill Russell, great center of the Celtics, who was one time had won the most MVP awards in NBA history, and the MVP award in the NBA Finals named after him, as it should be. He won it 11 times in 12 seasons, reality. And also Jim Brown. Jim Brown, I read his book, great book too. Jim talked about the fact that he came into the league and led the rush in his first year, a fullback, in the Wilder League as the MVP. And also modestly not remembering in his book talking about that he was the rushing leader. Jim Brown on the 15th, John Patrick McEnroe, still holds the record for matches won in a season. Peter C. Ray Robinson of tennis. And the next day, let's ever think. Man, this is by many the greatest basketball ever played. The month kicks off on the 2nd, the birthday of Arthur Ashe, Lee Samuels, the young man from Top Rank, Georgia Brooklyn today. And, you know, the first of my two is my nephew Nelson, I've ever seen. What's that? It's time to get on back for some more basketball, talk some more football, talk some more games. Doc Stanley, Sports is at 5 o'clock radio. Let's start the air network. So now, let's get on back in here and talk about it. Oops,
I got more of the grades, Doc.
Go ahead. Let's have Moose. Let's have him, baby. Give him to us.
Okay, this is the Southeast. Miami Heat, I gave him a B-. I gave the Atlanta Hawks a C-. I gave the Washington C+. I gave Charlotte a D and the Magic a D. And Central, this is the last of the Central. I gave the Pacers the A+. I gave the Bulls a B+. As you know, they've been trade half. They trade Luol Deng, and they're still playing hard out there. So I gave them a B+. I gave the Pistons a D. I gave Cleveland a D-, and the Bucks a D-. Yep. So that's about it. And next week, I'll give you the West Conference next week. Any questions on that, Doc?
No. Hey, I'm with Hal. Hal, you got any thoughts on those ratings? You agree or you don't agree, Hal?
I kind of agree with that. I mean, you know, the way these guys are going right now. But, I mean, we're going into the, halftime. I mean, so
yeah.
These guys don't stop playing until the second half.
Exactly.
What's the story now? We're going to see Kobe right after the All-Star break?
Yes, you will. You will see him coming back. You'll see him coming back after the All-Star break. He still want to play. And I think Steve Nash be on his last wheel. I think he's about to retire. He got hurt again, as you know.
And you know, he's a guy you hardly hear. You know, I remember Atlanta Fair, and the great Pee Wee Kirkland was there, the legendary, equally great John Isaacs, also the iconic Earl of Pebble, where they were saluting Pee Wee. And one of the things that touched Pee Wee so much was Earl Monroe. I remember Brian Taylor saying about Earl when the Nets with Julius, their first year they had Julius. Remember they came to the Garden, ran roughshod over the Knicks in the Garden, won at the Garden, and that was a precursor and also a prenoma that they were going to win the ABA championship. And I remember one of the questions I asked Julius was, did his defense get overlooked? And I remember Brian Taylor. Somehow the conversation was talking about Earl Monroe, and he said he's a pearl of a player, but he's also a pearl of a person. And he is that, just a jewel. One of the things that I'm so honored and blessed by God to have in my Trust in God Sports and Death Entertainment Artifacts Museum is a pair of George Gervin sneakers. I only have one pair, two of Gervin sneakers. The Smithsonian is interested in those. And I have a uniform. Earl, I see Earl now, the athlete had the uniform. He's ready to go in And you want the uniform, you say? And he came back and gave it to us. I'm looking at it right now. Earl the Pearl Monroe. When I put backcourts together, there's not a greater backcourt I've ever put together than him and Earl Monroe. And they were at their apex when they played. Well, Earl was allowed to do the things he could do. And I'm pretty sure the Bush and those guys, when they had no problem with it. But as the Rolls-Royce backcourt, I also have an autographed picture of them together. And they were the Rolls-Royce of guards, and they both had Rolls-Royce cars. And just two great players, two unique personalities, Clyde and Earl, so similar. Reserved guys. Not exciting as Earl is, you don't see him get excited. And Clyde, the big thing about Frazier, you could never tell. And I remember somebody said, you know, if you looked at Frazier, you could never tell if the Knicks were up by 7 or down by 3. Always above the pressure. And the great Bill Russell talks about how people talk about what a great defensive player he was, and it was an offense. And I remember Clyde once told me that if Willis Reed had never gotten hurt, he never would have had to emerge as an offensive player. 19 points a game, first ballot in the NBA Hall of Fame, and just a great, great player, and two great, great guys, Earl, the Pearl Monroe, and a great backcourt. I hear this week that Isaiah Thomas is going to be in town. And you talk about great guards. I mean, people don't realize that, you know, Isaiah Thomas, for all intents and purposes, was a better all-around player than Michael Jordan at Hoopsa.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I agree. Oh, yeah. I agree with that. Isaiah was a pit out there. He was something else.
Yeah. And
he had a mean streak in him.
you're out there to win. I mean, the great line, two of the great lines from the great Jackie Robinson, whose birthday was the 31st of January, 10 days after my mother's, and just the day before Black History Month. I mean, two of the things that Jackie said, his profound statements, I remember sitting in the stands before game, going to the press box and flashing on the board, and the one I had knew of, a life is not important except for an impact that has another life. And then the other great line, which is that good old Jordan and Isaiah and the great stickball legend, the greatest stickball player that I'm really made, above all else, I hate to lose. And just a profound statement. And if people understand, you know, Jackie was not only the first Rookie of the Year from an African-American standpoint of view, he was the first man ever to win the Rookie of the Year award. And you have to understand the kind of performance he had to display for the writers to give him the rookie, the first ever Rookie of the Year award. And Jackie Robinson won the next year. Alvin Dark won it. And then after that, they start giving the awards to both leagues. At that time, you were the best rookie in all of baseball, not just the National League. As when Don Newcomb won the Cy Young Award in 1956, the first year of the Cy Young Award, you were the best pitcher in all of baseball. You competed against both leagues. So you may have been leading your league. And then finally, when Koufax came along, mindset, he's going to win it all, so they started giving one for each league. Doc Stanley, Sports Net Blog Talk Radio, the Trusting Guard Radio Network. Who's just asking about the Kobe situation? Woodson, and I know Harold has an opinion. Is he on the hot seat? And why are they not playing as well as they did last year? And I think a lot of it has to be because the guy in the middle has been hurt there, Hoopsa.
Yeah. He's walking a plank right now. So, as I've seen from last year and this year, last year he's getting them guys cases. He's getting their ear. Now he's not doing it. So, that's another reason why I believe that. So, it's not looking good for him. And plus, you know, Carmelo Anthony and Dolan had a meeting. I know you heard about that.
No, I didn't. Give it to us, baby. What's
your hope? Yeah, of their sipping tea, as they say. And I think there was talking mostly about Wilson and with his direction. I think Dolan tried to get him to stay, too. Because, you know, he don't stay, he's in trouble. So, you know, he's going to opt out after this year, you know. He's going to opt out. He's definitely going to opt out, going to try his free agent options.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, he said he don't want to be a coach killer, neither. He don't want to get Woodson and fired. So I guess they talk about direction of the team. So we'll see what happens. But they one game behind the Bobcats for the last playoff spot, Doc. I think they're still going to make the playoffs. So we'll see. Doc, you still there?
I guess, Doc, I'm going to let you close out the show.
Yeah, we close out the show. So, Hal, I want to ask you a question. The Bradley fight, what do you think about that?
Stay tuned. Hal, go ahead. Give him part two, baby. Go ahead, Hal.
Yeah, it's I thought Manny Pacquiao won the first one. I mean, so I think he won this one. I think it's gonna be more exciting. I mean, he's gonna do. Manny Pacquiao is very scared now that he got knocked out the way he did. So he's not gonna take as many chances as he did before. And so he's gonna do a lot of staying on the outside and boxing and everything.
Right.
He's not going to be explosive. As people think he's going to be. If he gets a shot and he hurts the guy, yeah, that's all good. But he's not going to be as aggressive as he was when, you know, where we got to really enjoy him. And that's
right.
You know, he's looking at his political career. He's got more money, a lot of money, because, you know, his money adds up much bigger over there in his country. So basically, I mean, he's good to go if all's said and done, like he planned on having things done for himself. You know,
that's Aaron's both fighters, ain't they?
Yeah, yeah.
That's something.
I think his last fight didn't do good numbers with the pay-per-view, by the way, and I don't think this number's going to do good with pay-per-view.
Right.
Manny Pacquiao.
How do you have a problem with guys fighting from the same stable?
I don't care about that. I mean, you know, as long as the matchup is something that's worthwhile, that makes some sense. But if it doesn't make no sense, why? What's the purpose of it? So I guess the purpose of this is that Aaron wants to put $2 in his pocket because he has control over it all. So basically, the fight doesn't make sense to me because, you know, I mean, we all thought Manny won. But, you know, my whole thing, if Manny wins, okay, so, you know what I mean? You're at that point with Manny because he's gotten that, you know, he's been exposed. And the Floyd Mayweather thing has now been thrown out the window. So Manny wins, okay. He wins another title, okay. So where's the excitement about it? And that's what, that's the whole thing about it. It'd be different. Manny got this fight, and after this fight, we're looking for him to fight Floyd Mayweather. It was all exciting about because we were building up for that. When you get knocked out like he did and then get beat by Bradley too, I mean, where do we go? Where does the public say, this is a great event that we get ready to watch? That, you know, like I said, like I told you before, Doc, boxing has lost that excitement. It's not like the Super Bowl where everybody's looking for this, you know, Denver and Seattle. You know what I'm saying? It was a great rivalry, the old and the new. You know, the young quarterback against the old quarterback. And, I mean, it was exciting. It was a build-up and everything. Everybody wanted to see it and see this game. Boxing, they put a championship fight on, which they got 20 million champions. Nobody even cares about it. I mean, it's just a sad situation. I remember I was reading an old paper the other day where when they said a championship fight, that was the biggest thing going to talk of the town, wherever the championship will fight was. Everybody wanted to see the world championship fight. But today, don't mean nothing.
Bunch of paper champions.
Right, that's what they are, paper champions.
Mm-hmm. That, that line, it don't mean a thing if it ain't get that swing. Lucky looking at Miles Davis documentary tonight. I can't take Miles Davis. And they were talking about how much Miles missed and was upset about Coltrane leaving the band. Coltrane played with Miles for 5 years, and he said, you know, it was like having four saxophones in there. Unquestionably the greatest tenor saxophone player of all time. And I just, you know, used lunch much every day. I knew he had, in his book, he said Train was the diamond in the rough, and he knew it would be the diamond of the band. And Train had a missing tooth. And when he went to get it fixed, Miles was fearful that he would lose his sign. But and salute to Black History Month. Let's listen for a little while. Also, honor and praise the God. John Coltrane, which is our theme opening for our prayer here, and our closing theme. And Black History Month, let's listen and tune in to the greatest tenor saxophone player of all time, Miles Davis' right-hand man, and the one and only, the late John Coltrane, Dear Lord.
Sports Dip. Blog Talk Radio. On this lesson, guy with Network, playing some John Coates. Now, Harold, you're the most interesting. One of the most interesting individuals I've ever run into. You know, there's not a name I can't name. I was talking about Richard Pryor last night, and you were talking about Richard. Miles, you met Miles. Did you saw him play. Did you ever get a chance to meet Coltrane, Harold?
No, I never had a chance to meet Coltrane. No, never did. I was just looking at a movie just came on, and I was just watching it, Sparkle, when that movie by Irene Carey was playing in it.
Yeah.
The original.
I remember that that was my first red carpet movie I ever went to, because I was fighting in Paris. And I had just flown into back home from New York from the fight, and I got a call from a friend of mine, and they said they want to invite you down to the Sparkle for the red carpet. I said, who? And they said, well, you know, this movie Sparkles out. They want you to come down. They saw you on TV, and they wanted you to come to the premiere. So I said, damn. So that was my first premiere I ever went to see that movie Sparkle and everything. I was just looking at that. But, you know, it's funny when you talk about people that you meet in life and as you go. And, you know, when I met people like Miles Davis and it's, you know, it's not like meeting people. I mean, they became my friends. That's the crazy part about it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they became my friends, you know, like Joe Frazier and you know, Al Lee. And you know, we talking about guys, I mean, that I can call them up and they call me up and say they're in town and meet them at a certain restaurant or something like that. So, you know, it's. You look back on your life sometimes, you just say, dad, you know, I knew all these people. That were great. You know, like I said, you know, Miles, me and Miles Davis, you know, like I said, Miles Davis introduced me to, what's the name?
Art Russ
introduced Miles Davis. Me and Miles Davis became good friends, and he used to come to my fights, buying five tickets.
Miles was a big fight. It was Miles who told Sugar Ray, that was it, and Art talked about that. And we talk about Russ Jr., you're talking about, you know, the man, we talk about Black History Month, this is the man who started Sports Talk Radio, I mean, it's Phantoms of Miles, and Ryan Boykin, we say happy birthday to him again, it was yesterday now. It's remarkable to me that, and it's not when you understand the fiber and content of America from an American standpoint, but it's remarkable to me that Art Russ Jr. just didn't retire in the radio booth. I mean, he's the man who started Sports Talk Radio. Art Russ Jr. had the number one radio show on ABC, not the number one sports show. Art Russ Jr. had the number one radio show. And he told me that Sonny Werblin, funny story, asked him to be the PR guy of the Jets. He was one time, Art Russ was the first African-American PR man in New York City. Maybe might have been the first in the business. And, you know, Werblin asked him, how do you want to get paid? By cash a check. So, Harold, Coops, you know what Art said, cash. And wind up buying that Avanti. Go ahead.
You know, let me, you know, one thing, fellas, I mean, I got to go back to the way we was brought up and how we understood each other. But, you know, our people, we did not pass that throne to somebody, you know, in different, I mean, I don't care which industry it is, but that great person in that industry, whoever it is, they never passed that throne to another person unless they knew.
In other words,
knew that they was good at what they were doing.
You don't even have that
no more today.
No. No, you're talking about passing the baton, and it's amazing you said it. Doc Stanley Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. And I remember Frank Bannister, my first mentor. And I remember Frank said something that he impressed upon me, and I hadn't heard. Now, I was only 22, 20 years, and he said my alumni at NYSCS, New York School of Announcing and Speech,
Sid Gatney Jr. That's when Richie Blackman Radio was in New York City. And he said, well, that, in those days, that's when Lincoln's birthday came, you was off on Lincoln's birthday. It wasn't no President's Day like Monday. You got Lincoln's birthday off on the 12th and George Washington's birthday on the 22nd. And it made for a great month because you'd be off maybe doing Tuesday or Thursday, and you had another day off. It wasn't just one day. If it fell on the Friday or Monday. And he said, you know, let's go up to Mutual Black Network Radio, and I'm going to talk to Sheldon Leonard, who was the news director, and you talked to Frank Bannister, the sports director. And I met Mr. Bannister, and Frank told me, he said, you know, oh, he was ecstatic. And people used to tell me when he went to another radio station, because Mutual Black Network Radio left New York City, and they said, oh, man, Bannister always talks about you. And he told me, you know, hey, man, you know, I want somebody to take my place. And he got me credentials at Shea. And I remember he got me credentials cover game in Philly. And I think it must have been the Angel, the guy that met me there. And he met me there, and he drove me to the game, and we went up to the press box, we had credentials, we ate, and he drove me back to the station, unquestionably an Angel. And Frank talked about that, passing the baton, and he was he got me into radio, and he got me into television. He did a show called Sports in Action. And I remember Sid said, you know, Doc, you're the executive producer and everything. And I used to get guests for him. And Frank was a principal in the New York City, New Jersey school system. And sometimes he couldn't make the events. And I remember having some guys come up to the Golden Gloves. And when I met them the next week at the Gloves, they said, hey, man, we went up there and nobody's in the studio. I said, what? I said, well, look, I'm going to be off this day. And I went up there with him, told me, hey, look, Stanley, you know, I want you to handle a couple of the shows. And I remember the guy who wrote for the Golden Gloves at that time, Smith was his last name, I believe, and he came up. I did 2 half-hour shows, and right around the corner from the iconic 12B, which Double LIB used to be, right across the street on 125th and Lenox, and right across from that big bookstore they call the UCLA, and he turned to me. He said, hey, you know what, you're pretty good at this. And it was Mr. Bannister who first got me into radio, first got me into television, and that was a segue and a question of a great blessings. All great and wonderful things come from God. And that led me into eventually working with Marion Borkin, whose birthday was celebrated yesterday. Greatest boxing show in the history of boxing. Borkin on by everybody and anybody. We had Harold on the show. We had everybody on that show. Leroy Neiman thought the world of Marion. And I remember I told Marion that he reminded me so much of Joe DiMaggio. Whenever I would tell Mr. DiMaggio that Art Russ said, hello, is Arthur here? He had so much respect for Arthur. And I remember Arthur introduced me to Mr. DiMaggio, and we became friends, I mean, to the point that he would always speak. And I remember him, first time I met him, and I was standing in front of the Yankee locker room talking to somebody, and I see this figure walking toward me, and I look up, it's Joseph Paul DiMaggio. It's very nice to meet you. And, yeah, Harold, but, yeah, I thought about that, too. I mean, the guys... well, they haven't come up like we have. Bannister, and then my second great mentor, Hal Jackson, was the same way. I mean, Hal opened the doors. In this city, the four guys who opened the doors for other African-Americans who passed that baton, and we learned that from Bannister. We learned that from Larry Hardesty and Marion Borkin. And, go ahead,
you know, the strangest thing about those guys, too, back in those days, and how they had a little system, they wouldn't even talk to you if you wasn't good.
Harold, you know that's where you knew. That's where you knew you had made it. Well, you know what you're saying is that great biblical line. You don't catch the pearl on swine. You're right. I mean, if they didn't see something in you, and the thing about it, they knew talent. They
right.
knew talent, and they wasn't going to waste
it. It was an actor, it was a singer, a boxer. I don't care what the old guy. If you didn't have the talent, I don't care what them new say people write. And new say people wouldn't write that unless you was good. My point is, the old guys that really were good, they would not even if they talk to you. You got some talent. You got something.
And you say something, Harold. I remember. The late, great John Condon bringing me into the garden and gotten Jim Terrain, first black ring announcer down the full film, said, you know, that Johnny told everybody, hey, there's a new guy out there. That's why I met Harold. Fell in love with him as one of my great fighters. And he said, new guy out there, Mel Sonny, look out for him. And I remember the great line that Phil Pepe, the hotline is calling. Gentlemen, give me just a second. We'll be back in a minute. Let's go into studio. We've got a hotline.
Hello?
Still here. Still here. Hey, Al, what's the fight you waiting to see?
Huh? Say again?
What's the fight you waiting to see?
I don't know. Tell you the truth, I don't even know some of these guys' names out here today.
We need Lady A for this.
Yeah, Harold, I talked to Marion about that today. And Marion, you know, when a Marion Boykin has lost the interest, when a Harold Weston doesn't know who you are, Harold, once again, baby, you got to go there, that's sad and touching. Okay?
Yeah.
I remember my first fight. I remember, and I was so eager, you know, I got there early and, you know, not really that the main event doesn't come on. And I knew I had made it as a New York City writer. Understand this, ladies and gentlemen. When you've made it here, that's it. You have the highest degree of positivity, acceptability, credibility here, New York City. And I remember as a fight, as apropos it should be, and we were going back into the dressing room to interview the winner of the fight, and the great Phil Pepe. And it shows you, you know, a lot about as much of the racial issue and things hadn't been as they were going to be or should be, but still there was a decorum. You know, there were people who always, Hal Jackson, well, Frank Sinatra always went by his own beat. There was no black and white with Frank, you know what I mean? And you know too, Hal, because you met him. And I remember Phil Pepe, the great Phil Pepe. We're on our way to the dressing room, and it showed where I was accepted into society and for credible people, you know what I mean? Because the success is being accepted by those who know. And Phil Pepe turned to me and says, Mel, I was sitting on the other side of the ring. Was that a left hand or a right hand? I said, that was whatever, the right hand. He said, okay, thanks, Mel. Just that, you know, that you knew, hey, you know, because like you said, Hal, in all those venues, they studied you, okay? Because if you weren't at a level, you weren't getting in, Hal. Like you said, you weren't,
right.
They weren't wasting their time,
right.
and they were not going to be embarrassed, okay?
Right,
because
their name is on the line.
Exactly.
I remember
Phil Pepe, you know, doing that, and I remember a couple years ago when Vic Siegel passed away, and I had him autograph my book, and he said, a long-time friend, Dave Hershey, the last of the great PR men in New York City and the world, And I remember I went to the fair one time, and he said, oh, he said, you know what? He needed that from me. He said, no, never let me down. I remember Joey Goldstein, and, man, he had something down at the Carnegie Deli. And he called, told Dave, he said, Dave, get all the fellas together. There I was, sitting there in this horde of legendary sportscasters and writers. I'm the only African-American guy there. And there was guys, and the guy said, hey, man, I remember you, and you know, I was a baby and I grew up. These were lawyers and doctors and great athletes, you know, during the early part of this century. And hanging there with Joey Goldstein, you know, and Doc. And you know, when he passed away, you know, there I was with a picture with Joe. Always called me, hey, Doc, we're doing something here. And you know, these, you're right, Hal. You look back, and I say, I'm going to put a book together, Doc's Words of Wit and Wisdom, you know. And one of them I said, you know, if I don't call you, don't come. And another thing I said, you know, I've been many things in this life, but being blessed is the highest. I mean, he blessed me, you guys, Doc Stanley's for the Block Talk, Radio and Trust God. We know we're talking football, best everything, but you guys, Harold. I mean, I remember you, man. You know, hey, just I'm the only way to bad motherfucker, man. You know me, man. Remember, you know, and you always, and see people and out of respect for you, say, hey, this guy knows. And you, and then you know, when you elevate, you didn't change, Al. You didn't change because fame is fame
people,
and
people
money
people.
Doesn't change you. Fame
yeah.
and money doesn't change you. It exposes you. And there's a guy in this business we talk about that's a straight up perpetrating the fraud. Again, a term from Marion Boykin. But I remember, man, the you and John, the door is always open there to me. The people, okay, through you, his Benitez, his Interfermo, these guys at Garden set up, Hoopster. I remember you, man, as a police officer, man, and I met you. We became friends, and I hadn't seen you for two years. I'm out of 14th and Union. Hey, where you been? You know what I mean? I through his connections and another gentleman, you know, I, for the last, 30, 40 years, I always had an open invitation to go to the finest theaters in this city and see some of the greatest movies ever. And all these are just blessings. But like you said, Harold, we came from an era and a generation. We came from the last great generation, the music. As I play some of this music here, you know what I mean?
Also, you met C. Wings, then C. Wings introduced you to Lady 8. The rest is history.
Yeah. But I'm just talking about, you know, you.
But I tell you, you know, I'm going to just leave it with this, but you know who was one of my good friends and nobody knew about it? And a lot of people didn't like him and everything, but he was a great writer. Dick Young. Me and Dick Young we always met every week to have dinner or lunch. Me and him would sit down for two or three hours just talking about the world and life. Me and Dick Young.
It's funny you said that. It's funny because I was getting ready to, when I talked about Pepe, I remember Young. I have a picture of me and Dick. And Dick always, a lot of guys didn't like Dick. I think a lot of it was jealousy, whatever. But I remember Dick took me in to a certain degree as everybody else did. Hey, Dick, hey, how you doing? Come over. Ramon was chatting for me for a little while. And I have a picture of me and Dick as he came to the press conference when Don was over at the, he had his office at the Rockefeller Center, and they had a press conference, and he was there. But, yeah, Dick was a whole part of him, Dick Siegel, Phil Pepe, all those guys. My man Moon out of it's funny. Moon out of a Jersey. You know, I look at this stuff now, and there's no press sitting courtside at the Knicks games. I'm befuddled by that. And there was times, you know, they won't put it. And I said courtside when it meant something, Harold. That's all. When it meant something. You know, when I'm watching Frazier, Monroe, the Busher, and here comes Jerry West and Oscar and Kareem. You know, had Bob Love, Chet Walker, you know, Chamberlain. You know, when it meant something, you know what I mean? When you look back at that, I thought, hey, you know, I sat ringside to watch the greatest fighters ever fight. You know, I know these guys. I mean, we had Joe Frazier on this show, the last show he did, through you, Harold, the friendship. I mean, I remember you, Harold. It was a cold, snowy day. Joe was in town. You told me about it, and we were both sitting there. And you looked across at me, and you said, Mel, I wouldn't have come out this weather for anybody else but Joe. You said,
fine.
I mean, I never get that, man. And I remember Joe was sitting there eating the cookie, man, and we was laughing. And I asked Joe, I said, Joe, was Ollie the best fight you ever fought?
He was a chill.
Joe took a bite of the cookie. He said, yeah. Then he said, look at me, he said, but George beat me up. he said, but George, and then he laughed. He said, you know, because George got mad because I wouldn't stay down. And what I remember him calling on the show. Hey,
right.
Mr. Mel, where you at? I mean, you have no idea what that meant to me and to my show. But, you know, Joe Frazier, one of the greatest fighters in the history of mankind. Joe Frazier, the first African-American to win a gold medal in the Olympics in the heavyweight division. The first man to beat Ali. Only lost to two fighters. And I remember when he closed the show, he said, hey, fellas, you know how much – he said, you know, I got to go. He said, you know how I feel about you guys? He said, I love you like a hog loves slop, but I got to go. And Harold had set it up. And when we were – it was sad and touching that you were having a problem getting people to salute. Ali said, you won. Ali Frazier, there will never be anything greater than Ali from the Smithsonian is interested in the press kit from Ali Frazier one that I had. And I had Joe and Ali both autographed and Leroy Neiman. I mean, you know, you had to be a writer to get that. But, I mean, to have Leroy, okay, Joe, and Ali, you're talking about three of the greatest people in the history of New York City sports and boxing. And I remember it was sad and touching, Harold, that you were telling me that nobody wanted to salute Ali. I mean, not that they did not want to salute Ali Frazier one. They didn't know about Ali Frazier one. This is the greatest fight in the history of mankind. There will never, ever be anything to surpass. And the thing about this, ladies and gentlemen, as I talk about, Harold Wesson was a pivotal figure in that. Not only was Harold there, but he talked about how the Garden, it was beyond their scope. I mean, this is a fight where they stopped the war. This is a fight. I remember when that fight. First, we thought the fight was never going to happen. You think Ali was going to get his license back? Hey, he's not going to get his license. He got his license. That was like Willie Mays hitting against Walter Johnson. That's not like Dr. J, you know, playing against. It would be like Dr. J in his prime against Michael Jordan. You know, it's Jim Brown running against the Giants. It Dale Sayers against the. You didn't think it was going to happen. But what I remembered about that was that when that fight was announced, everybody in the world both knew about the fight and had an opinion. When that fight was announced, if you was on the train, it was a different mindset of people. But you could turn to anybody and they'd be saying, sure, hey, man, who do you like for the fight? They had a reply. Am I right, Harold? Everybody had a reply. You could ask anybody. Anybody, a guy got a plan, who likes to fight? Everybody in the world in New York City knew about it and had an opinion who was going to win the fight. You don't have to, not like today, right now. We were like, so-and-so fight. Yeah, who's fighting? Where's he fighting? You knew who was fighting and where they were fighting. You know?
Yeah.
Leroy Neiman, the Knight of Knights. And I just, it was sad and touching. It was remarkable to me that you were having a problem getting people to remember Ali Frazier. One, I mean, you talked about it how redundantly of what this fight did in a time of no cell phones, okay, no fax, okay, no internet, nothing but the telephone and the newspapers. It's just, and you have to wonder, in Black History Month, would this have been different had one of the combatants been a white fighter? Would this have been different had this been celebrating Tony against...
Cooney and Larry Holmes?
No, I'm talking about the long count fight. Gene Tooney and, oh my goodness, it slips my mind. Considered one of the great sluggers of all time. I got to see his face. Tooney beat him for the first time, and then Tooney beat him for the second time. He had the restaurant, Dempsey Tooney, you know what I mean? And you wonder what they were saluting at. It was just mind-blowing that they didn't. Not only did they didn't want to, but they had no idea who Ali Frazier was. I mean, it was just crazy. I mean, no athlete in this century has had a bigger impact or more renowned than Ali. I mean, there are a few guys you could name in the same venue, Jackie. Actually, internationally-wise, it's only him and Pelé. Jim Brown had
I think when Ali did what he did, he became one of the greatest men in sports. They had one of the biggest names around the world. Nobody was bigger than Ali.
Oh, no, yeah. Are you talking about when he took that stand?
Yeah, when he took that stand and did what he did and he came back and fought and then, you know, he lost and then he won the title again. My point is that nobody was bigger. Nobody had ever came bigger than Muhammad Ali. Ali was known around the world, and how great he was.
The biggest face, the most recognizable face on the planet. And the
on
thing
the
about
planet.
I've said this.
On the planet. On the planet.
On the planet. See, what had a lot to do with that was him being a Muslim too. That because he entered a religion over there that was also very, very large. And then I said this, and you know, I'll say it again. If Muhammad Ali has time for autographs, pitchers interviewed than everybody else because everybody else is a second. Shoot, I mean, not a distant. Jim Brown's not a distant second. Jackie Robinson, not a distant. But everybody else is shooting for second place, you know? And
yeah,
and
yeah,
I just
they're not known around the world. It's a big difference.
No, yeah, I'm just talking about that. Ali can do it. And that's my point. If this man of this grandeur and stature can do it, then who are you at 22-0? You ain't got time for autographs and pictures. Who are you who happened to hit 300 for the first time in your career, or you're a 279 hitter? Who are you coming up the bench scoring 8 points a game? You ain't got time. I mean, here you are, second string quarterback. And I remember Doc Sanders putting the blog like Veteran Trust Club. And that's what we're saying once again here as we doing our show here Saturday. I'm getting excited. Monday night, now it's a Tuesday morning show. Having birthday to a host of people. And, in the Trust and Guard Sports and Depth Entertainment Artifacts Hall of Fame Museum, I remember Ollie won the Potemkin Award, first ever award, last time I saw Howard Cosell alive. And I grabbed some things to take Ollie the autograph. And I had about 7-8 things to say, maybe more. And I was just picking out what I would have autographed. And I gave him 3 or 4 things. And then I said, thanks, champ. And he looked at me, looked at the bag, and said, well, what's in the bag? I said, I got some more stuff, champ. You can't sign everything. He said, give me everything, man. It's Ali. Okay? What's in the bag? I said, champ, you can't sell everything. Give me everything. And there's a guy I know, okay? There's a guy I know who's supposed to be cool. There's a guy I know who's supposed to be a great fighter. There's a guy I know who's supposed to be a buddy of mine. When I'm around him and he's playing the other role, I can't get away from him. Hey, man, you know I don't sign gloves. But, you know, here's Ali. What's in the bag? Give me everything in the bag. How was took the gloves off his hand and gave them to me. Took the gloves off his hand. You want these, Mel? Off his hands. Okay? Barry Bonds handed me his batting gloves. Here you go. You know what I mean? Chipper Jones, take this. You know, can't forget it. Give you specs.
I remember a conversation me and Ali had, and what he told me. You know, he said, Harold, he said, I'm so glad that me and you are in here sitting in this room together. And that's when I was working at the Garden. He said, I came up here just to be in this room to see you work. Because, he said, I thought they were just using you as a front. But he said, I see that you know what you're doing. He said, but I don't know how much you're making, he said, but it doesn't make no difference how much you're making. He said, the purpose of life is making yourself being a person that has real morals about things and care about things. He said, because the money's going to come later on. He said, nobody can take the knowledge from you when you get it. He said, and that's the most important factor of you putting a stamp in the ground of life and making yourself being a man, that you stand up as a man. And he said, what I see you doing what you're doing here today has made me realize that you are in charge. And he said, I'm proud of you, my brother. Me and it always stuck to me, that conversation, because even with Gil saying the same thing to me, is that I listen. If you remember, Al, you never heard Ali in all the years say, well, man, I got to get $500,000, or man, I got to get this much money for the fire. You never hear him saying that. They gave him a figure, he took the figure, and he went out in four and beat the best. He said the thing about what he wanted to show was show a legacy of where nobody can beat that what he has accomplished and is a heavyweight and being the best in the world. And you know what? He did that. And those guys that's going to just want the money, money, money don't have the legacy of Muhammad Ali. And Ali has never made as much money. Not even Larry Holmes made as much money as Larry Holmes.
Hmm.
But yeah, you know what? Wow. He's more important than Larry Holmes. And one thing somebody told me, and it sticks together, they said Ali will never go broke in life. If he says he's broke, they'll do a fundraiser and raise $100 million for him if he needs it.
Yep.
That's how great he is. And that, and no, and that, and that, those words always stuck with me. That's become, it's about pride and dignity with me. And the creator, money's gonna come. You know, it's gonna come. But you know, but you, with the greed that you have today, it's about the money, money, money. Yeah, we all love money. But you know what? It's about the principle. And if you don't think about the principle first, you're not going to achieve the situation at hand.
Mm-hmm.
These are, you know, when you listen to certain people, and you know, the words, you know, it's just words, and that's what you hear. But if you take those words in and understand it, and every word that I have been given to me and been talked to by certain great men, you know, they words, you know, it didn't happen then. But when you grow up and you start getting older, then you say, oh, shit, that's what they were talking about.
What did you say? What did you say? Say it again, Harold.
I said, oh, I shouldn't say it, but I said, oh, man, that's what they were talking about. Because it hits you. It all, you know, it starts happening.
You're saying something that hit me the other day. You know, I've been dealing with the Smithsonian for a while, and some things looking good all by the grace of God. And Jim Nesfield, who really was the guy that spearheaded everything, he sent the letter to them, saying the spike. And after he saw it, the negotiations looked pretty good. And he sent me something that's so profound, and it shows, you know, a life spent finding the value and wonder of the time you live in is a glory to the Lord. It shows appreciation for the gift of life. A life spent finding the value and wonder of the time you live in is a glory to the Lord. Appreciate you for the gift of life. And then one of the things he talked about, and when he sent the letter to the Smithsonian, was that he said that I've captured a time capsule of time, you know, of African American and New York City in sports history, and you know, a time where I've got some things that bring back the moment. The platform shoes, the high heel shoes, when guys didn't use batting gloves, but you know, and that hit me. I didn't realize, because my motto is trust in God, all great and wonderful things. But that's the life I want. Only what you do for Christ will last. That's what I want to be at the forefront. And I've been so proud. I remember one time I saw Julius Erving, and he saw me, and he got up and he walked toward me, and he always calls me Mel. But this time he said, trust in God. That's what it's about. You know what I mean? Your legacy. You know what I mean? What are you going to leave? There's not the longevity of one's life, as Dr. King said, but the quality. And this showed, you know, the fact that a life spent finding the value and wonder of the time you live in is a glory to the Lord. It shows appreciation for the gift of life and what Christ had to pay for the gift of life. And that says so much on the realm of what you were just saying, Harold. You know what I mean? And when Jimmy sent that to me, I said, well, I didn't, you know, I didn't understand, to a certain degree, what I have been doing. Because, you know, in this country, you know, it's always the negative with African-American. You know, you're seen as the autograph hound, not the collector. You know, it's when an African-American gets on drugs, he's the villain, as opposed to his Caucasian brother, he's the victim. A great line by the late Nelson Mandela, we are our brother's keeper. Brothers come in all color. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, and the thing that you're saying that, we know, like Ali said to me, he said, one thing you want to do, Brother Howell, is this. He said, you want, when the day comes and you look back and they said, what did you do when you was down there, Howell? What did you accomplish? Who did you help? Who did you lead? Who did you give good advice? What did you do? Or you want to say, oh, I made money. Or you want to say, well, I helped John get, you know, get out of the hole. I saved so-and-so's life. Or I got so-and-so and got an education. Or I saved this young lady's situation from getting raped. And I did this. And he said, you got to have a meaning. He said, because God bless you when you help others and you understand it. Well, he didn't say God, but he said Allah. You know, but my point is that, you know, we had a nice little conversation. They were looking for him, and then they find. He set my offer for about 45 minutes, and we exchanged numbers, and we talked later on after, too. But my point is that we had a deep conversation about, you know, who you are as a person and everything. You know, I always cared about mankind and other people, you know, benefits in life, too. And I never liked people to be taken advantage of. But, you know, my point is that you don't have that kind of people grown in this society today, because this society is all about money and about themselves. And that's where the tear down is going to be, as I see as we move along, because people don't want to learn their craft and get good at what they do. They just want to get to the money, and if the money comes first, that's all they want to do. They don't care if they learn a darn thing about what they were trying to do, and that, right. And that's the sad part that we're living in.
Hmm. That's true.
Because I've seen a lot of people have a lot of money, you know what? And they sit up in them hospitals and they got tubes up their nose. And I see people that can't hardly walk and can't talk and just can't do nothing. And they got money and they don't know where to go. And the sad part about it, they don't know how to communicate with other people. But, you know, they got money. But you know what? They're nobody.
Right. That's true.
So I'm just going to take it as I see it with my daddy, you know, and what I always say to myself on my case, brother, just be true to yourself.
Yeah. God take care of the rest, right?
Yeah. Because he'll do what he's supposed to do. He's going to do his. I said to my friend the other day, I said, you know what's so sad about a lot of things in life? If a lot of people was reaching out for certain things, everybody did what they supposed to do, a lot of things would have been accomplished. But because of that one person didn't do what they said they can do and didn't do it, that's what makes a lot of things fail. Because one person always say, yeah, I can do that, man. Or I can get in touch with so-and-so. Or I can get this situation. And you know what? They be fronting, and then they can't do it. When everybody put theirs together, and then they...
Well, you know, that's the thing. Back to the Bible, you know, the what's done in the dark will come to light. I mean, you know, it just you don't understand, but yet there are people who are habitual liars. I mean, you don't understand, you know, why somebody, you know, would do that. I mean, you know,
right.
Why tell me
right.
it's raining outside? I'm going to walk outside in 10 minutes. I know
yeah.
It's not going to be raining, you know?
Yeah, and what people don't understand, and I'm a great believer in God, in the Christ in itself. But my point is, they don't ever think that with their lying and cheating and taking, they don't think it's gonna come back and come back and haunt them later on. They that's what amazed me about people. I just think I sit back and say, do you think you're gonna really get away with this? You might get away for that moment. But do you think down the road you're going to get away? And then when that situation hit them, they say, oh, why me? Why is this happening? Look back on all the bad stuff you done did in life and to people.
Hey, you know, it's a simple situation, though. You got to read what you sow. You can't go out in the garden and plant all potatoes and look for oranges. And, you know, it's just, and if you do, it's sad and touching. Dr. Stanley Sports, their blog, talk radio, on the Trust and God Radio Network. We're going to go right now and talk to Gilberto Ortiz, the Latin side of Boykin on boxing, and give us some of his insights and thoughts on boxing right now. Jumbo, Gilberto Ortiz, Boykin on boxing.
The Latin side of sports in depth, actually the Latin side of Brooklyn boxing, the man, Gilberto Jumbo Ortiz. We're going to talk boxing. Let's talk the Latin side. Jill, what's the latest on the scoop? What's happening on the Latin side of boxing?
I don't know, but I hear that Carlos is not fighting Canelo. He's fighting Sergio Martinez for the tone of $15 million. $15 million. He turned down the $10 million from Oscar De La Hoya's Golden Boy promotion to take on Sergio Martinez, $15 million.
Okay, and Alvarez is back on the scene.
Alvarez is back fighting sometime next year against Carlos Molina, being that they couldn't make the fight with him and Cotto, so they're both pressing on to different fighters.
Jim,
Martinez probably be a safer fight and could propel winners of both those fights if Cotto wins and Alvarez wins, then we finally get the Alvarez-Cotto fight, a fight that a lot of people have won, especially in the Latin community.
It would be nice if they can both win their next opponents, but I don't know. Cotto's got his hands full with La Maravilla. I think Canelo might do away with Carlos Molina and become world champion again, IBF world champion.
A guy you've liked for a long time, the Cuban Laura, won a title, camp intro champion, beat Trout, 19-1. He's a force to be reckoned with, and he's a good little fighter.
He is. He's fast. He's quick. He's good on his feet. So I think a fight between him and Canelo in the near future would be a good fight. Could also be a pretty dangerous fight for Canelo.
Wow. Big talk now. Rigadoff won. I saw him for the first time up close. Great hand speed, left-hander. Great footwork and stays in shape. I saw at the end of his round, he was running back to the corner, and there was talk of him at the knee again. And he told him, hey, tell the knee, no problem. Let's do it again. He got no problem with that.
Well, I'd like to see the rematch on that, but I don't know. From the last fight that I saw Dornier with Victor Chinian, I don't know. He looked like he wasn't into the fight, but he was afraid to get hit. And I don't know. He just didn't look like the same Dornier from the past. I'm hoping that if they do have the rematch that, Dornier comes prepared.
Victor Ortiz loses Luis Casado. That's the fight that press conference has announced at the Barclays Center. They're going to fight again. Two former champions. Your take on that fight, Jimbo?
It'll be an interesting fight. I can't remember the last time I seen Collazo fight, so I'm sure he did, but I didn't see him fight. Also, Victor Ortiz has been out of the ring for over a year. So, it should be a pretty good fight, I would say. But I think Victor should have the edge on Collazo.
That didn't happen at the Barclays Center in June. One of the things was, everybody that was supposed to win lost. Devin Alexander lost. A lot of beating Trout, not so much, but it was suspected that Zab Judah was going to come in and beat Paulie Malignaggi, and it didn't turn out that way.
Well, I was surprised. I really thought that Zab had to fight. Evidently, he didn't. I don't know if he didn't train properly for the fight, or his mind wasn't at the fight, wasn't focused for the fight. But I always thought that Zab was faster, not only faster, but stronger, hits harder than Paulie Malignaggi. And that being said, I thought that was going to pull out the fight, but to everyone's surprise, Paulie Malignaggi was on his A game. Did a good job.
Would that maybe the best fight that you've seen Paulie have in a long time, or maybe of all time?
It's hard to say because I'm not sure, but I kind of think that maybe Zab made Paulie look good only because of the fact that had Zab come in the way he did when he fought Danny Garcia, I think that he would have beaten Paulie Malignaggi. But I don't believe Zab was on his A game. I think Zab made Paulie look good. Not taking away nothing from Paulie. Paulie's a good fighter. It's hard for me to say if that was the best Paulie I've seen, but he did look good. He did look good.
Danny Garcia. Okay, Garcia, last talk about maybe have one more fight at his weight and then going up. There's also Amir Khan who did the commentary for the fight. Okay, Khan, let's go to Danny first. Danny Garcia, one more fight at 140, goes up. What do you see, and what's the word you heard on Danny Garcia?
Well, if I were Danny, I wouldn't waste any more time at 140. Who else is there to fight at 140? I'll just move up to 147. That's where the money's at. That's where the big names are at. If he wants to make big money, that's where he needs to step up to. That being said, I think Danny needs to move up to 147, and there's a lot more talent there at 147. Devin Alexander moved up, Amir Khan moved up, Paulie Malignaggi had moved up, Zab Judah moved up. The list goes on and on. There's a lot of good fighters at 147, and Danny's a good fighter. He's fought pretty much you know, some of the top guys at 140. And, you know, I think you should step up and, you know, fight some of these guys at 147. I think he'd be, you know, pretty good at 147.
And no doubt, too, Joe, if he sets at 147, he becomes another name in the Mayweather sweepstakes with the falling of Trout, with the falling of Alexander, and, you know, Paulie is not that kind of name, so Garcia could be the guy that could propel himself into the Mayweather suite. There's four fights left to go.
Hello. Sorry for those technical difficulties. And with that, let's get back to the rest of our interview with Junebug as he talks about the sweet science.
From Triple G that you realize that this guy, you know, he's actually the
Soon, Doc Tony Sports and the Block Talk, we're in the Dressing Guard Network, to a birth to June Ortiz, the Latin sportscaster on the Latin side of the Iconic, working on boxing, and we'll continue the question. And the next big question is, once that I've talked about, I think now the time is impeccable. The timing is right. It may be the last shot at a Manny Pacquiao and a Floyd, Pretty Boy, Money Mayweather. And we've talked about this too, June, and as the buzzer hit, and there was the big question, that was the signal for the big question, I feel the time is right for Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather. I think this is the last time, and I think in lieu of the fact that it's the, with four fights left, it's the money fight that Mayweather needs. A lot of people, like you said, you know, Alvarez Mayweather happened only because of a poor showing on the first pay-per-view card, John.
But that's, you know, I mean, listen, as a boxing fanatic, you know, I want to see that fight between Mayweather and Pacquiao. I mean, there's a lot of fans out there, even the casual fighters want to see that fight happen. But I don't know. I just don't see that fight happening anytime soon. Coming into 2014, I don't see it happening. Mayweather's fighting two fights a year. I don't think that Manny Pacquiao was in the fight for 2014. And I don't know. I think as long as Manny Pacquiao is being run by top-ranked Bob Arum, I don't see Mayweather sitting down making any kind of deals to fight Manny Pacquiao, whether it be this year coming up or the oncoming year. Now, let's not forget, Manny Pacquiao's contract with Top Rank is expiring coming in 2014. Now, I don't know what Pacquiao's going to do, if he's going to re-sign again with Top Rank or not. Maybe it would be in his best interest to not sign and find another promotional company that can make him, you know, make the fight happen with him and Mayweather. Because I think as long as Top Rank is running Pacquiao, the only thing you're going to see from Pacquiao, if he signs another contract with Bob Arum, is rematches with Timothy Bradley, Marquez, or maybe even a possible fight with Povetnikov. So, or, I don't know, maybe Brandon Rios too? I don't know. But that being said, I don't see the fight between Pacquiao and Mayweather happening coming into 2014.
So we just point to make you Doc Sally Sports at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Government Network, Gilberto Junberg Ortiz, the Latin, literary Latin sportscaster on the Latin side of the Iconic, working on boxing, Marion B. Boykin, Black Bodation, Brilliant, brother, greatest boxer of all time. There's two things that you brought up too, and one was Pacquiao Mayweather out the window. Tim Smith said something that you said, and coming back from Atlantic City with the Iconic, Lindy DeHasis, one of the legendary trainers, he talked about, you know, Pacquiao really is in a financial state. You know, I heard that he got no money from that last fight due to back taxes owed. And Tim Smith, with you, has said that the only way he feels Pacquiao and Mayweather will happen is when, like you said, he's no longer with Top Rank, and then he has no other alternative, and him and Floyd can sit down and finally make that fight. And with four fights left, there's room for that fight, June.
So, I mean, I feel that they both kind of need each other to make that kind of money. The money that Mayweather will be making in the next four fights won't be anything near close to the money he's made with Canelo Alvarez. The only man that can make that money happen is between him and Manny Pacquiao. It'll be a great fight if they both make the fight happen, but like I said, I don't think Mayweather wants to sit down, not so much and make the fight happen with Pacquiao, but I think the animosity is there definitely between Bob Arum and
Arum plays it on. Stanley. Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio, Lesson Guard Radio Network, our Latin correspondent, Gilberto June Ortiz from the Latin side of Working on Boxing, and then we're gonna play that again in depth on the next show, as we gotta close out here. To the little area, leave with three thoughts: live life today, have to stand before God tomorrow. Vice knows the system. The urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Serve to others, and you pay for your space on earth. Happy birthday, Marion. Love you, baby. By my heart, God bless you all. Trust in God. And now Marvin Gaye. as his say.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time
when the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world.
To save a world.
That's destined to
that
die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world.
When I look at the world.
It fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today.
Children today.
Really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
When we can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Live for life. Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
But who really cares?
Who's
thank you. change my life.